Welcome to episode 12, part 2, Breaking Through with Sam Castle, part 2 of a 4-part episode. Before we go into the pod, I just want to say a massive thank you to everybody that voted for Northern Hales Cricket Club, the Tractor Boys, in the Virtual County Cup as we beat Longton Cricket Club. Another giant killing. And I just want to say a massive thank you to our partners that will allow our social media content to exist, including the podcast. Special thanks to Giles Brewery, the Inspirational Learning Group, First Reunion Media, and Adained Recruitment. Stay tuned, listen up to part 2. This is the Norton and Hales Cricket Club Podcast. Okay, welcome to episode 2 of the Breaking Through podcast with Staffordshire captain Samuel Castle. In episode 1, we spoke about Sam's introduction to cricket and everything that's kind of going on in the world at the moment, and also the Virtual County Cricket Cup, which was a very good time, I think, because Sam's also brought the whole family into drumming up a bit of social media support as they draw on Canuck in the competition. So, Sam, talk us through. You mentioned in episode 1 that you joined the Notts Academy at age 11. Can you talk us through sort of that process of being sort of selected and sort of what happened sort of in the early years of being part of the academy?
So it really come about as I got asked to join a training session with Andrew Jackman. Used to play at Longton years ago, Jackson, West Indian cricketer. Mm-hmm. And Pete Wilshaw was going to his training sessions over at Nottingham. Mm-hmm. He said, "Would you come along?" Of course, I just said, "Yeah." So Pete's old man took us over, had a session with a group of kids from Nottingham that Jacko was leading. And then from there, Jacko kind of said, "Would you come and join my Saturday sessions held at Trent Bridge in the indoor school, just where a load of local cricketers kind of got together?" And he kind of run 3 lanes, different age groups, different ability, and sort of 3-hour session. And I kind of did that religiously for quite a while. Mm-hmm. In the end, my dad started taking me over, and then he then put my name forward to the academy director at the time, Chris Tolley, and said, "I think you should look at Sam." To which he did. He invited me along to an academy net. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Sort of a couple of weeks later, Chris sat me down and wanted me to sign on the academy.
Cool. And what sort of involvement in, I'm not going to say compromise, what sort of sacrifice? Because obviously at that young age, obviously, I think most 11, 12, 13-year-olds want to go and kick around with the mates, that sort of stuff. What sort of, I mean, driving to Nottingham, what's that? About 55 minutes to an hour there, an hour back, obviously pushing time.
Yeah.
So what sort of sacrifices were you having to make at that point? So obviously you make a decision when you sign up for the academy. What sort of sacrifices are you as a sort of 11, 12-year-old lad having to make at that point?
I don't think I had to make any. I think it was my parents who were making.
Yeah.
You know, I'd my dad used to sit me down to watch cricket from as early as I could. That's all I wanted to do. I was so driven to play for England. That was my goal, as it is a load of youngsters across the country. And my mum and dad were so committed to try and help me to do that. You know, as you say, an hour there, an hour back on a good run. At weekends, on a Sunday, it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. But during the weeknights, when the academy sessions started to kick in, it was sometimes twice a week. Mm-hmm. So Monday and a Wednesday evening. I was too young to even consider the commitment that they were making. Mm-hmm. They were just like, yeah, we'll do it. So yeah, I think as I grew older, the sacrifices probably started to come in terms of not being able to go out with my mates. And mm-hmm. but from a real young age, it was more my parents who were having to give up a lot of things to, you know, to push me to achieve my dreams.
Yeah. And at what point, kind of through that process, did you realise that it was going to get a little bit more competitive, and obviously the opportunity to sort of, you know, each year, obviously, to be an extension of the academy, and then obviously approaching sort of the sort of senior level. At what point do you think that you realised that it was going to be quite competitive to sort of break through? So I can't imagine at 11, 12, it's very fun, sort of driven, it's the novelty, but at what point do you realise that it was going to get really competitive for places?
Good question. Competitive for places is hard to try and answer, but I would say when I knew it got serious is when I left home at 16. Mm-hmm. So I finished secondary school, got terrible grades, really didn't try hard enough at all. But again, that was down to me being probably now I'd say stupid. I should have took my school work, you know, more seriously, and I'd certainly advise any youngsters to really do take them exams serious, certainly when you leave secondary school. Mm-hmm. But again, my vision was just, I was so tunnel visioned, and my parents just backed me. But I left home at 16 and just did college for a couple of days a week at Nottingham. Mm-hmm. College, which the club funded, and then trained on the other days, and that's when I probably hit home, when my mum and dad dropped me off at that big house that we were all in, five or six of us. Mm-hmm. Dan Cummins was there, Ben Maguire, and it kind of really probably hit home then, I thought, when this is a life I want to live, and this is what I want to do, you know. And then when you're training, that's when you see the competition, and you see guys pushing each other, and you're thinking, yeah, I'm up against him. And being in that second team environment for a long time, the competition's hard because you want to win games, but ultimately you're striving to get that individual performance that ultimately gets you selected in the first team.
Yeah, I mean, you said obviously you were in a quite a big house, obviously. You think, was there anybody in the house that you found yourself in sort of competition with? No, you said there, obviously, I'm in competition with you. Is there any, does that sort of affect the sort of the dynamic of living together, or is it sort of very much a case of, you know, this, as I say, like white line fever, you know, social against, and what's that?
Yeah,
sort of
no, I wouldn't say so. I think because you're living with each other, and you know, we'd all left home at 16, and it was quite daunting, and your parents hyped it up, and they were like, oh, my little boy's leaving home, you know. Some of us had never cooked a meal before and things like that. So that house was quite good in the fact that we all got around each other, and mm-hmm. we all supported each other, and not just cricket and training and the college work and so on, but just the life skills as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd all go food shopping together, and we'd be going through the aisles of Asda, stuff like that. It was great memories, but I guess ultimately you were in competition with each other, but I mm-hmm. never felt that ever came and caused an atmosphere or anything like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, just before we sort of move on to sort of the bit more of the senior thing on that, was there any sort of body that sort of that 16, 17 year old period where you thought you saw a raw talent that probably didn't live up to potential at that point? Or
I was actually thinking about this the other day, you know, I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking, but I was thinking of who in local cricket now could have a future in the current modern game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually thinking about Ben Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody with his ability and the ability to hit the ball out the ground, you know, on demand sometimes. I've seen him play back in the academy where he would take bowling attacks apart and almost dictate where he hit the ball. You know, he got a freakish ability of switch hits and just clean striking of the ball. And, you know, I would say somebody like Ben in the current game where he could go to a tournament and play for a month of T20 and then come back and train. And would somebody be like somebody like him who could feature, you know, for whatever reason didn't quite work out for him at Notts, but yeah, he would be one, I think.
Yeah, okay, cool, fair point. So obviously, so you've moved to Nottingham, you live in this big house, obviously with some of the local guys that we mentioned, obviously Ben and Dan Cummings. At what point was there a big switch for it to then to be kind of, I don't really know where I'm going with this, in terms of like an age where it went from being, we're not really academy cricketers anymore or trying to push through, we are generally part of the aims of senior setup. At what point did that change?
When we first moved there, once we got settled in and whatnot, we were then invited to train with the squad.
Mm-hmm.
Horrendous squeaky chair, I do apologise.
No, that's fine.
We trained with the squad maybe a couple of times a week, just in the gym doing fitness. And obviously playing his second team games, it didn't happen, but I would guess if you put in unbelievable performances consistently, you may have been considered for higher honours. And somebody like Ben, who wasn't contracted at the time, got a game in the ones, got a couple of one-day games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, myself played a couple of list A games, I think, before I was contracted, I think. But I think when it really hit home was when I signed my first deal. You know, I sat down and actually put pen to paper on a professional contract at Notts. I think that's when it really, really hit home that it was happening now. And obviously before then you build up to it and that's what you're striving towards. But mm-hmm. I think then it hit home that, yeah, this is real.
Yeah, okay. And how long was that first contract for?
2 years, my first one was. Yeah.
Sorry, did you say you were 18? 2 years.
Yeah.
2 years. Okay, cool. And what? How did that sort of time period work out for you? That sort of during that contract period, what sort of highs, lows? How was that working out for you?
Well, I signed off the back of just coming back from the England under-19 setup.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really have a very good tournament actually, so I'm not sure why Mick decided to sign me, but we won't talk about that. Well, yeah, those 2 years. Again, as soon once I signed that contract, it was kind of right. We've got to go again now. You know, the work didn't stop at all. It was kind of that. Yeah, brilliant. You've been rewarded for all the hard work you've put in beforehand, but now it's actually time to find that next level and kick on.
Yeah. Okay.
Played a lot of second team games.
Yeah.
A lot of second team games. Just managed to get five, six first class games, I think. Captained a few second team games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Okay. In terms of so obviously you signed a 2 year deal, obviously coming towards the end of that, what sort of happened at that point then? What sort of conversations and stuff were had at that point?
This is when I have to really rack my brain. My memory's not brilliant. off the top of my head, I remember signing maybe a 1 year deal.
Mm-hmm.
Which was obviously what I wanted. You know, I wanted to continue on and to be a professional for as long as possible. A lot of people questioned why I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, I say to people now, you know, I had nothing behind me in terms of stats, in terms of cricket numbers, in terms of runs for mm-hmm. other counties to. You know, why would they take a gamble on me to sign me?
Mm-hmm.
He's played 80 odd second team games and averaged mid 30s, but he's only played 4 first class games and averages 10. So, for a county to take a gamble on me then would have been a bit of a risk for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One regret is that I never really pushed to go out on loan,
mm-hmm.
Which. I wish I'd have done, but again, it was kind of that. I guess the fear of the unknown. You know, what if I went out on loan and didn't cut it? You know, I'd then come back and be stuck in the second team again, and come to the end of that year, I'd perhaps have been, you know, told to move on or there's nothing here for you anymore. So that's something I wish I'd have managed a bit differently.
Yeah. Okay. In terms of obviously on that, so you signed a third year deal. At what point did you realise that the first class scene probably wasn't going to work out?
Coming to the end.
Yeah.
I'd actually had one of my best years, albeit in the second team, but in terms of runs wise. You know, I had a really good year, and I remember getting a couple of games in the first team due to the international boys being on duty.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I'm fairly sure a lot of other people, if you would speak to in my position back then, would say the same. You always kind of know, no matter if I'd have scored 80 or 100 or 150 or 200 in one of the games, I always felt that I'd be back in the second team the week after.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually got, if I could, I'm sure, after that 1 year had ended, I kind of got like a 3 month buffer period mm-hmm. at the start of a year
yeah.
to say, look, it's kind of now or never type thing. To which I had a really brilliant start. I got a couple of back-to-back hundreds in the twos,
mm-hmm.
And I was kept on for that following year. But then, at the end of that year, that's when my time come to an end at Notts.
Okay, and then what was your immediate transition from Notts in terms of involvement in cricket? I think I've read somewhere that transition was a bit difficult to take, as I imagine it would be, given the fact that was all you ever wanted to do.
Well, it's kind of, obviously came as a shock. You know, I didn't know it was going to happen, but you always have a feeling. And I can remember going into the dressing room. It was during a match day, actually, that Mick called me in for a kind of a chat. And the vibe in the dressing room was, oh, don't worry, Kels, you'll be fine. You'll get another deal. You've had a good year. There's opportunities here. So on. And I was actually pulled into the physio room with Mick, and he sat me down, and I knew straight away it wasn't good news. I could just tell by his expressions and the look on his face, and he gave me about a minute of his time and just said, it's not working out anymore. You know, we don't want to keep you here when we don't see any opportunities for you. Kind of wish you all the best in the future. If you need us, we're here. And that was kind of it. Walked out the door. Then I decided that winter to go to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my family and thought it'd be the best thing to just get out there, play, continue playing, new, fresh challenge. Go and live with my brother's godfather, so I was kind of with family, which I was really looking for, really looking forward to. And then, and this could go on for ages, by the way. I could speak for this for about hours.
It's a good touch point. I'm sure we'll kind of talk about it. Obviously went to New Zealand, obviously just we'll kind of stay on this just a little bit because obviously it's quite a poignant point. Kind of, how did that work out for you? How did New Zealand kind of work? Did it have the desired effect?
Well, quite ironically, the cricket went unbelievably well. I played 5-7 games, I think, scored 700 runs. Really look forward to playing. It's kind of a weird format abroad. You play over 2 weekends. So one weekend, you know, especially as a batsman, you might do absolutely nothing. So the key is to stay in as long as you can and bat and bat and bat. Don't get out early, else it's a horrible 2 weeks. Especially if your team's no good at bowling. Well, the cricket went really well, and it was weird how it went. You know, I wasn't... all I was out there doing was playing and coaching. And I had a good deal out there. I was looked after well in terms of a car and a living accommodations and a beautiful countryside with a pool. You know, everything like that was just brilliant. But then, I don't know, it was weird. I kind of woke up one morning in tears. And I was kind of questioning myself, what's going on here, you know, what why am I doing this? And I thought, oh, I'll be all right, get up, you'll be all right. And then it continued quite a few times. So I had a conversation with a couple of the guys at Notts, who I stayed in touch with, a couple of the players, and I also spoke to the PCA, which is the Professional Cricket Association. Who then passed me on to some professional advice. And I had a few phone calls with him. He called it adjustment stress, adjusted to a new environment, having been through what I've been through, so on. So I kind of bared with it. Again, them weird sorts of crying spells during days when I'd be out doing something, and I'd just break down. Fuck, it was so weird. I don't know what it when I think about it now, I kind of laugh, but it was obviously not at the time when I did not know what was going on. Then Amy came to visit over Christmas, which was, you know, I was really looking forward to, and we had an amazing time. Visited loads of places, you know, as much as we could, because the cricket stopped over the Christmas period. We had a brilliant time, but them periods of them crying episodes were still happening whilst Amy was with me. I'll never forget one morning, I woke up and I just thought, she'd gone to the toilet, come back, and I was crying. She's like, what is up with you? Why are you doing that? And I'm like, I don't know. I wish I could tell you. I don't know. Well, you're right. Yeah, I feel fine. All right. And then it just kind of brushed under the carpet. Yeah. Anyway, she then left after 3 weeks. Drove her to the airport, dropped her off, drove back. played a couple more games, I think. Again, did really well at the cricket. My performances on the pitch were, surprisingly, because of how I was feeling during the week, that was kind of all I was looking forward to, was the cricket. And my performances were good. And I didn't make anybody aware at the club of how I was feeling. I didn't even make my family at home aware until... when Amy left, my head fell off again. And I was walking around Auckland, around the city one day, and this guy from London rang me, the guy who I was speaking to for the professional advice. And he knew straight away, as soon as he picked up the phone, he said, "You're not well, are you?" And I said, "No, I'm not. I'm going to book the next flight home." So that was kind of then I decided, sat down with firstly my family who I was living with, and then the club, and it was just a shock to everybody. But it got to the point where I actually didn't want to do anything. Like, I didn't want to wake up in the morning. I didn't want to wake up. I had no focus, and I just needed to get home. So that's what I decided. Came back.
Cool. In terms of just listening to that, you still feel the rawness in there, and I've never been through, obviously been through, but anybody who's been through any adjustments and things like that, there's nothing wrong with having a good cry if things aren't quite right and different things. So it's kind of nice to hear you sort of laugh about it now, sort of see, what are we, 6-7 years later?
Yeah, about that.
Okay, cool. Well, that wraps up episode 2. What we're going to talk about is what happened to Sam's next part of the transition in cricket, and obviously his new role, which has kind of been a little bit
dead in the water, mate.
It is dead in the water at the moment. All those planning and preparations, the thing. So we'll come back to talk about his new role as Staffordshire captain, and tune in for episode 3. Thank you.